How Not to Suck a Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information contained herein and provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended and shall not be construed as legal advice. And with that, enjoy the show.
You spoke, we listened.
Our number one product, the Divorce Crash Course, is now available as a private podcast.
So for $150, you'll have access to listen to the DCC just like you're listening to this episode right now. You can watch the DCC and you'll get the printable workbook.
More importantly, you'll get insider information to save up to thousands of dollars on your divorce.
The Divorce Crash Course, expert divorce guidance for a fraction of the price. Check out the link in our show notes or visit thedivorcecrashcourse.com. The process of getting divorced might suck, but you don't have to suck at getting divorced.
You have found the only divorce podcast that's hosted by a family law attorney and a recovering comedian. Get ready for action steps, empathy, and a lot of laughs.
This is How Not to Suck at Divorce. Okay, I have a new punchy opening I want to try out.
Oh, okay, try it out. Let's go.
While the world might have narrowly avoided World War III, you might feel like you're going through your own. This is How Not to Suck at Divorce.
Ooh, wow. Yeah. Well, was not expecting that. I guess that would be my first comment to it's punchy.
Punchy, really gets you.
But I'm going to say we're going to cut that. We're going to cut that out.
Mm-hmm. I say we archive it. You never know when we need to bring that back up. Goodness gracious, the fuck is going on right now? I mean, these people, I feel for everybody who is in the thick of it because don't watch the news. Let's just start there. Stick to like streaming shit because the chaos around us. I mean, we're talking about fear today. So just avoid all forms of everything right now if you are easily triggered. Good God.
I'm easily triggered because of summer and it won't end. And my kids being out of school makes me it's causing me fear. I know that other things are happening in the world, but I've shut that all down, like you just said. But I come home and I'm just fearful of my children who have been in my house and not in school all day,
who are hungry all day long. The amount of like snacks but now I'm bored. I'm bored. Mm-hmm. And I want to what can we go do now? Nothing.
Nothing. Go be bored. Sorry. We barely survived our childhood and we were bored all the time, but we made it through. Here we are.
Ran through a sprinkler and ate like chemically ridden popsicles that we sucked out of plastic.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Right? Mm-hmm. We made Kool-Aid. Bring back Kool-Aid.
Right. When was the last time you saw a kid with like a broken arm? Like, get your ass outside, go be a kid, and maybe break something. Like, just do.
I literally remember playing in ditches.
Yes.
Like, I literally remember playing in ditches with sticks and like starting some sort of cult, probably. You know, like, what are these kids? My God. My kids the other day were like, we like never go to Topgolf.
You know how expensive Topgolf is? Like, go get a job. Go get a job and then you can go to Topgolf.
You're eight.
I don't care. Child labor. Go get a job. Then you can go to Topgolf. That's my rule.
What do you mean we never go to Topgolf? I don't fucking go to Topgolf. To go to Top. I mean, I get it. I get the allure of Topgolf. They're like, well, daddy takes us to Topgolf. Good for fucking daddy. The other day, I asked them, I'm like, what'd you guys do on like daddy weekend? Because usually my kids are like zip tied clothes. Like they don't talk about it. You know, what happens during daddy weekend stays during daddy weekend. Okay, whatever. Well, this time they were all too eager to share. Well, on Saturday, we went to a water park. And then Saturday night, we did Topgolf. And then Sunday, earlier in the day, we went to a different water park. Not the same water park that we went to on Saturday. It was a different one in a different area. And then Sunday night, we went to a movie. And then Sunday after that, you know, there was like an after party. And then we like drove around and then we went to a new restaurant. What the how many fucking hours in the day and what like unlimited funds are coming out of that account?
Well, that, and I think I'm just hearing some jealousy over Super Dad over there.
I mean, actually, no, it's not even that. It's good for you. I have no desire to do any of those things.
Sit at a water park is my complete nightmare.
It makes me think of our friend, oh God, who was it? Jessica Interlandi, who made a joke about just because you can doesn't mean you should. This goes for water parks and divorce.
Yes. It's so true. What a great like saying from her.
Oh, Lord. Well, as we are both like shaking in our boots over here because we're terrified of our children's boredom, and you're probably terrified of everything that's about to go on in your world, we're bringing on a guest who has really formulated some very thoughtful ideas based around fear. And this is a girl who went through it herself, understands fear to her core, but we're going to help you guys unpack why it's really dangerous, actually, to be controlled by fear as you navigate your divorce. And we're going to give you some helpful hints so that you don't do that. I know that this process is really scary. And I know that often the scariest part of the process is that pulling the trigger part to start everything. So in this episode, we are number one, we're going to validate that fear that you're scared, because you are scared for a reason. It's not like someone is telling you like, oh, there's no bear chasing you in the woods. Why are you afraid? No, for a lot of you, there's a fucking bear chasing you in the woods. So number one, we get it. Number two, we're going to give you tools so that you don't allow that fear to take over and dictate some decisions that you're going to make, which could lead to some really, really big mistakes.
That is right. And here's the thing. What I see as a divorce attorney all the time is that when that bear is chasing you, the easiest thing in that moment is to make a quick decision. We don't make good decisions when we're scared. But the reason you made that decision is because the bear is chasing you and you're scared, and that seems like the right step. What we're going to do is talk you through that you can back up and make a good decision. Because again, I'm going to reiterate it, and you're going to hear it a lot. We don't make good decisions when we're scared.
So today, our guest is a woman by the name of Erica Bennett, who maybe you've not heard of her unless you listen to her podcast, Crazy Ex-Wives Club. Listen, Erica lived a normal life. In a normal marriage, she had a flourishing career with Aveda Corporate, and then things started to change in both her marriage and later in her career. So Erica knows fear. She lived through fear. And what she's going to share with you guys today is how she didn't let fear completely take over. Maybe she made some mistakes that she'll share with you that you all can learn from. But overall, Erica Bennett has now made a life around not letting fear control you. So Erica, hey girl, and welcome to How Not to Suck at Divorce.
Hello, ladies. Wonderful to be here. And this is my favorite topic. So I can't wait to dive in and talk all about fear.
Okay. So selfishly, I have to tell you that I grew up with Aveda, and all I want to hear about is Aveda, because when I was younger, Aveda was like the really expensive stuff that you got only once in a while. And it smelled so good. That smell, like it's like tea tree or something. It smelled amazing. But because this is a divorce show, I'm going to tamper my excitement over Aveda. And we're going to start here. Tell me about your marriage and what happened.
Yeah. So, you know, we could definitely talk about Aveda. Same experience growing up, but my marriage. So in 2015, you know, we had a, let's see, got to do some math. I had like a 3-year-old. The marriage had been rocky for a while, right? You know, I love self-help books. So I was always reading a book and reading an article and watching a video and coming back and being like, can we try this? Something's off, something's wrong. And I kept just getting told, no, like, we're fine. We actually were in the middle of trying for a second child. And I knew something was off. I remember that night specifically, you know, crying. We had a great conversation. We had just connected. And I was like, I really thought we were done. Like, I really didn't think we were going to make it. Like, I'm so grateful we're here. Off he goes to hang out with his friends at the bar. I go to bed, but I can't fall asleep. Like, something is wrong, because he didn't really answer me. He like brushed it off again. He comes home from the bar. I get the, I love you. but I'm not in love with you. We just want different things. He rolled over and went to bed. It's the first time he had like slept through the night in years. Like you're watching somebody avoid the truth and have it show up in, you know, sleep apnea, and he couldn't sleep and there were all these issues. And so he finally was like, spoke his truth. Blissfully slept the entire night.
Talk about dropping a bomb on you. Like, my God.
Yeah. So start of my like not sleeping for many, many, many years. I went to work. I rolled into Aveda the next day. One of my coworkers took one look at me and she's like, I don't know what happened, but I'm walking you right back out and you are going home because something is wrong. I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't think. I could barely form sentences. It was such a huge shock that my whole system started shutting down, right? Like I couldn't, there was no processing left. And it actually took years before I could like watch TV again or read a book because my mind was constantly scanning for danger. It was constantly living in that state of fear. Do I need to fight or flight? But I was so frozen at that point.
What did you do with him, though? So he says this to you, right? He's like, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. Okay, good night. And then, so, like, walk me through what happens. You come home the next day after, like, being kicked out of work for being a disaster. And yeah. You did what? Like, you said, hey, we have to talk about this. Did you avoid him? Were you paralyzed? Yes.
Well, and this is where fear had owned me. I was so afraid of moving on without him. I was so afraid to start over that I was desperate to do anything to save it. How can I negotiate a different solution? How can I convince you that you're wrong? What do I need to say? What do I need to do to get you to choose to come back to this? So
yeah.
We had found a new therapist. He had finally agreed to go. And I think we had had one session and then this bomb gets dropped. Well, I went through the computer. So I went through the computer. We had one log on. I found the other woman. And so when he came home from work, and you know, I'm still, now I'm in a real hot mess. And so I'm like, well, what about this other woman? He confesses to an affair he had many years ago when our son was 6 months old. And so I'm literally like, I didn't even know about that one. What about this one? You know, like holding up the screenshot, the one who you are saying, I can't fall asleep without saying I love you. And so this is where, you know, in your body, like I kept being like, that's weird that he falls asleep with his phone on him. It's weird that like, now he's always kind of gone. There's all these things. But again, fear. Was so afraid to think that, is he cheating? Like, is this what's going to happen? So obviously, massive bombs are now going off all over. But again, I was so afraid to start over that I did all the research on why people have affairs, what causes affairs, is it real, right? The different types of affairs, the emotional affair, the physical affair, and how do you win somebody back?
Right.
And so I spent the first year literally only trying to get him to come back. We were separated 2 years before I ended up filing because something was just wrong.
So I want to ask Morgan, how many times do you see this where you have one person who is like literally acting out in the marriage, right? Like doing something else. And then the other person, maybe they come to you and they say, God, I really don't want this. And I'm going to try everything in my power to make this better. And what usually happens?
Yeah, I see this a lot. And so the story is unfortunate. And what usually happens is the person who is like kind of you, what you're talking about with your story, is just kind of putting up with a lot of crap for a long, long time. And they're doing so much work. They think they're doing so much work on themselves, but really it's kind of spinning their wheels, trying to figure out like how to please the other side. They're not really working on themselves or addressing the fear at that point. And it kind of happens similarly to Erica, which is at some point, for you, it was 2 years down the road. At some point, you say to yourself, I can't keep doing this. Like, this is insane. And everyone around you is thinking, this is insane. But it doesn't matter until you're actually at that breaking point. So it took you 2 years. And I see a lot of clients, you just have to get to that breaking point where you're like, one, I'm getting a little stronger because time heals everything. Or two, I'm just not going to put up with this anymore. This is insane.
And what's interesting is that Erica also mentioned doing a separation, which is something that we covered in the last episode, which a lot of people think like, oh, a trial separation is a great thing to do prior to pulling the trigger. And you guys, so many times this period of separation just allows the person who wants to do whatever they want to continue to do it. And then you're just hanging out in purgatory.
Well, Erica, that's what we talked about in the last episode, and I want to get your opinion on what happened with you. Mm-hmm. One of the things I said that wasn't really probably the most popular thing to say, but it was exactly what I see, which is if you separate, and I mean physically separate, not just mentally, if you separate and you've got somebody like your husband who had another relationship, I mean, that is just kind of giving their cake and letting them eat it too. Did you have the same experience?
Yes. So my learning was, you know, there were pieces, like I had kicked him out of the marital bedroom because I couldn't handle, like I came home that night, I stripped the bed, I pulled everything. He's like, what is going on? I'm like, I don't want your smell anywhere. You can sleep in the spare bedroom. He rented an apartment without me knowing, moved out while I was out to dinner with a girlfriend, came home to learn that he had like, he was moving out and we were separating. I think when it comes to separation, space can be good if there are guardrails around it. Because otherwise, in our instance, what ended up happening is he told me they weren't talking. He told me they were coworkers. And so he's like, well, I have to be polite to her at work. And I can't control whether or not she calls me, but I'm not contacting her. Because there were a handful of times where his phone would ring and it was her, or he'd be on the phone and I'd be like, who are you talking to? And so he continued to say they had no contact and they weren't talking at all. And the whole time they were continuing to be in their relationship. And so unless you set very specific expectations and both parties can abide by them, separation can really just give them a free for all.
Mm-hmm.
For me, what the space did was, you know, I still spent a lot of time afraid for my life trying to figure out how to save it. But every single book and tool and coach I went to kept saying, you cannot control him. You can control you. Let's focus on you. And so in that separation time, that's where I dove deep into how is this fear and anxiety showing up and how do I regain control? What do I want in a partner? How do I want to show up? Because I was not being who I wanted to be in the marriage either. And so in that way, I found that this space was really helpful. On his side, he didn't change anything. And so it's got to have very clear rules around it, because otherwise, exactly what you're saying, Morgan, everybody just does what they're going to do anyways.
Yeah. And then you kind of play this, you play this game of like, we're working on it. But it's like, nobody's working on it when someone has stepped out and is keeping stepping out. Like, no one's working on it. And
I love stepping out. I love stepping out.
Stepping out, baby. Okay. So Erica, tell us a little bit about what the hardest part of like the 2 years was for you, because you said you were separated for 2 years.
Yeah. So the hardest part for me was not knowing when it was going to end. I wanted somebody to have a crystal ball to tell me like, hey, this takes 6 months or this takes a year. And I wanted somebody to, you know, so I mean, I like all the woo-woo stuff too, but I got deep into like Akashic records and having people like, you know, use tarot cards. And I was desperate for somebody to just give me the truth. And so that was the hardest part, to sit in the unknowing. And so it got crucially important to learn how to be in the present moment, because I talk about future tripping. Right? When we are future tripping, we are fear, anxiety, we're running with stories, futures that we don't even know if they're going to happen, but they have us paralyzed in the present moment. And so I would notice like, oh, my thoughts are running down this path. You're forever going to be alone. He's never going to come back. You're never going to be having a second baby, blah, 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 whatever it is. Oh, you're future tripping, Erica. Present moment. What's around me? What can I see? What can I feel? And that's what helped me then. Oh, I don't need it. I don't need the crystal ball. I can be okay one day at a time.
Erica, sorry, Andrea, I know you have a question too, but one thing I want, if our listeners are out there and they're freaking out because they're like, I'm like sweating, can't catch my breath. This is exactly mm-hmm. me. This is exactly what I'm going through. And they want that crystal ball. They're not going to get it, but here's what they might get. I want to know, and I'm jumping ahead a little bit. Are you happy now?
Yes. And now I just got goosebumps all over you guys. So the truth is that your happiness is unconditional. We put it on our partner. We put it on all of these other conditions around us. And when you go through something like a separation, like a divorce, where all of the systems you've built in your life collapse kind of all at the same time, you get to be real choosy on where you put your energy and where you put your time and how you want to move forward. And it starts with, again, regaining control over how your mind chooses to see things. So we're not seeing it through a fear-based lens, but it takes work because fear gets louder the more you ignore it.
All right, we got to back this truck up because I think we need to validate everyone's fear just a tiny bit more, because you touched on something that I think is really important. You mentioned the tarot cards. And I think a lot of people listening is like, oh, the bitch went nuts. Okay, no. Because here's the thing. Feeling that deep fear that something scary is about to change in your world and having that mindset of maybe there is something that I can do to make this person love me, that will make the most sane person, and I'm raising my hand right now, do fucking crazy things. And I'm going to tell you guys a story. When I was on my honeymoon, and I've said this publicly, my marriage was never good. I never had good days, but the relationship was never good. It was bad from the minute go. So I'm on my honeymoon. We're in Morocco, and I buy this fucking snake oil for my husband to drink that's supposed to increase his sex drive, because homeboy had not a drop of interest in me at all. We never had any chemistry. There was never anything there. We're on our fucking honeymoon where people where historically you read the books like, oh, we couldn't keep our hands off each other. Oh God, we were rolling around naked in the sand and I got a yeast infection from a jellyfish. No, I'm buying snake oil off of a camel's back in Morocco, hoping that, and to me, that was like a totally logical move, right? This is going to happen. I also went and had my fucking palm read, and you do crazy things because you are in such desperation. So I want to give you guys a minute right now to take a breath and say, it's okay. All these wacky things that I did that maybe I'm judging myself for and that I feel shame over because it's so quote unquote out of character for me. This deep fear of not being loved will really eat you alive. But what I want to know now is, what was the turning point for you, Erica? When did you reach that point where you said enough is enough? This marriage is dissolving and it's going to be okay.
Yeah. So that first year, frozen. First year, desperate. Everything I did was solely in an attempt to change his mind. And the second year is where I started to have these moments of having my feet underneath me, you know, where all of a sudden the day just felt really good and things were just kind of falling into place. And I ended up getting sent on all sorts of amazing work trips, which hadn't happened before, but I was sent to Japan and I was sent to London and I was sent to Taiwan. And so I got all these space and experiences. And at the same time, again, the inner knowing, you don't have to go outside for the snake oil, the tarot, the whatever. When you start to reconnect with your own inner knowing, which we can't get to when fear's in the way, but as that fear got less, the inner knowing got more, I'd start to have these glimpses of what I wanted my life to look like. How did it feel? What did a day in the life of Erica look like, feel like? What was the experience in it? And I started to show up to the conversations with him different. I remember one specifically was after the 4th of July, and I had taken my son down to my mom's to do the fireworks and sit on the blanket at the park and watch all the things. And I came back and I was like, you know what? I want a partner who wants to do that with me, and I deserve it. And I go, because at this point, there had been a lot of stories of, well, you were so negative and you were so bitchy and you and you and you. Right? A lot of rationalizing as to why he was okay to have the affair. I was not perfect. Okay. I was a little crabby, but that doesn't mean that I deserved all the other pieces. Sure. And so I came back and I was like, I'm worthy of having a partner who actually wants to be around me. So you need to start really thinking, because either you want to be here or I'm moving on. So December of that year, then holidays, he's like, I get a card, right? And he's like, I want to come back. I'm ready. And I get a card, like, I know it's been a ride and I know I've taken you through this whole thing, but I'm really ready to finally show up. And I was like, actually, what happened was I got on the plane to Japan. It's a 12-hour flight, pre-days when you bought Wi-Fi. So once you got on, you turned your phone off and like there was no reception. And I had walked on that flight. I was so excited for this trip. It was the second time going back. I sent the message and I said, it's a 12-hour flight. And by the time I land, I want your answer. Because either we are moving forward or we are done. Hit send, turned it off, land, got the message. And the message said, I'm ready to work on it. And I cried. It wasn't like I didn't feel the things I thought I was supposed to feel at this point. I fought so long for this thing and I finally got the thing and it wasn't there. So flash forward to that Christmas, right? So we're now trying to do this together. He's doing all the things. He's showing up, but it doesn't feel right. Something feels like it's missing still. There's a lack of emotional connection. There's a lack of being vulnerable with each other. Surface level shit again. And so that started me on the path of, you know, I started interviewing lawyers. I was like, something is wrong. It was our anniversary, February 1st. I sat down. I was in a collaborative lawyer's office talking about how we could do this in a non-fighting way. And he was making a joke about forgetting that it was our anniversary.
Oh, God.
And I was like, I don't think you get it. Like, I spent the day with lawyers. And if you can't even prioritize the first anniversary that we're back together, then we have problems. So I ended up being like, we're done. We wrote our own divorce agreements at the kitchen table, turned it over to one lawyer, processed it, split the lawyer fees, and he didn't show up at court. And the other woman moved in a couple months later.
So your divorce process doesn't really look like most people's in a good way. It can work for some people. For the majority of people, it can't work there. But can you tell us what mistakes you would say that you made during your divorce process?
Yeah. So I would say one of the mistakes I made often was expecting my lawyer to be my therapist. So because this is such an emotional thing, and this is the person who's the expert and trying to help me figure out the details, when he would do something like, oh, she's back in the picture, and I'd reach out to the lawyer hoping that there was some legal thing that was going to help me get more out of it. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, the lawyer would listen and send me a bill. And in the end, the lawyer just wouldn't return the phone call because, again, outside of what they're actually hired to do, that was a huge mistake. And then the other mistake I made was I honestly was a little bit too nice. And so because I had spent all this time finding myself, finding how to extend grace, understanding, love, acceptance, to truly move into believing in abundance, it meant that I allowed a lot of things, behaviors, conversations, or lies that I really shouldn't have. But I think I was so trying to see him as, oh, he's also hurt. And oh, he's also doing these things. And so I really didn't prioritize my own feelings in that and let him kind of lead that.
Did that feeling when you just said I was too nice, do you feel like that bled into you giving up more than maybe you would have not, like, given up in terms of assets or things during the process? Also, I'm so curious to know, like, you, it sounds like you guys shared an attorney.
I hired her and then we split the bill.
Okay. What, now remind me, what state are you in?
We filed in Minnesota.
Okay. Because that can differ. Because Morgan, correct me if I'm wrong, but where we are, even if somebody does collaborative, they each have an attorney, right?
Generally, yes. And you can kind of do it what she's talking about if someone is pro se or representing themselves, and then they can reimburse the other side for half of the attorney's fees. That's fine. But truly, that one person is unrepresented, which I'd never, ever recommend.
Yeah, no.
I do want to follow up on one other thing she said. And again, it's state to state or country to country. And she was calling her lawyer when he was back with the woman. And, you know, she was upset, but there also could be ways that you want to call your lawyer on those things. And you want to know what the law is where you are. So, for instance, maybe where she was, it didn't really make sense. And she was using the lawyer as a therapist, which, again, if you have a big estate and a lot of assets, lawyers are decent therapists. But if you don't, you want to conserve your assets and your expenditures with your lawyer. But on the flip side, there are things in certain states, like, for instance, if Erica's husband was spending money on this woman, where I practice, there's something called dissipation. So it might be relevant. Those calls might be relevant to try to get some of that money back for Erica. So what I suggest that you do, wherever you are, if you're in Erica's shoes, call your lawyer once and say, if this happens in the future, what should I be looking out for? What's relevant to you? Ask what actually is relevant so that you don't get the big bills, but you also know what to look for.
And use our guides that we have where we're walking you through how to communicate that with your attorney, because you never just want to dump all of this on an attorney who, by the way, might moonlight as a great therapist, but they're not a therapist. That is not really within their scope of work. And your billable hours are really high. So be mindful on how you communicate. Okay, Erica, because you were being too nice, what were there things that you gave up that maybe you shouldn't have given up? Or were there areas where looking back, you're like, you know, I should have fought a little harder, or maybe I shouldn't have just easily said, sure, you can have all of this.
Do you need help putting together your parenting agreement or what some may call custody schedule?
Take us up on our offer to help you save money in attorney's fees by using our Best Parenting Plans workbook.
It will help you visually see some of the most popular schedules in a calendar format. So listen, if your head is already spinning by trying to figure out what a 225 is, 50-50, 60-40, and yada yada, this workbook is for you.
And we also put in some creative ideas and a special note from me on items that you really want to consider before agreeing to a parenting plan.
That's right. Get the Best Parenting Plans workbook on our website, direct link in the show notes.
Yeah. So, you know, again, because our situation was so unique in that we literally sat down and divided everything ourselves. And he did. He opted to be unrepresented. So he was representing himself. And that's how we could get through the court system on it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we both worked. We both paid for our own car. We both had our own 401k. And so because a lot of things were very similar, we just were like, okay, well, that's yours. And that's yours. And so much of our assets never had to be divided. We had never joined bank accounts. Our bank accounts had ran separately. So like he paid these bills and I paid these bills. So the biggest thing was definitely the house and moving through that negotiation. You know, when I would let the anger take over, I would fight for more. We'd walk away. We'd take some space. I'd line back up. I don't regret where we landed on everything. Because again, I felt good in the moment, but it showed up in terms of, you know, like afterwards or during the process, if he was resistant or not texting or whatever, I would make these stories that he's really hurting and he's not good at his feelings. And so, you know, that's okay. And the reality is like, you know, what happened afterwards? We were good when we signed it. We were not good when the other woman showed back up. I didn't agree to that. I didn't sign that. I'm no longer following it. And so now there were three of us and two people putting pressure on him. And so that's where I was like, I'm kind of too nice. Like I'm trusting that what he says is still going to happen instead of looking at the behaviors. I'm not really toeing the line on what's in the divorce decree because mm-hmm. I just don't want to go back to court. Those were the kind of things that in the moment, am I okay with it? Yes. Am I okay with it now? Yes, because I wanted to just move through things. But looking at it, I was continuing to self-abandon. I was continuing to not prioritize my own needs. I wasn't holding the line for him to have to show up and be an equal co-parent in things. And I was writing excuses for him instead of just remove the emotion and look at the facts, because now we have a business relationship, not a marriage.
With co-parenting, what did custody look like? Did he mm-hmm. want 50% of the time? And was that something that you were like, okay, this is not a problem? What I mean, for me, I'll tell you the hardest part and really the only hard part of my divorce was the kids. And that tore me apart So what was that like for you?
Yeah, so we both were open to 50-50, but my thing was, is you have to be there. So he works retail hours. And at that point, I think he was on like the 4:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. shift. So great, because when we were separated, he was always done early. He picked our son up from school. He brought him back to the house. They made dinner, right? And then I came home from work later. Mm-hmm. Well, I go, I'm not doing 50-50 if it means he's with a sitter. And so when this started, he wanted 50-50. The sitter was there during our separation. Our child was having massive meltdowns. Like, I had to pull him out of the back seat, kicking and screaming when he saw the babysitter car instead of his dad's car. And that's when I drew the line and I was like, you can have him as often as you are home. So if you only have 2 days off a week that you can be there for him, then those are the 2 days you get. So whatever 2 days a week you have off, your son is always with you. If you change jobs, if you become more available, we can look at it again. But I am not going 50-50 to send him off with a babysitter.
Kids will cause so much animosity between divorcing individuals because there is no more precious asset to us than our babies. And I think that what feels so funky about it is, you know, biologically, you created these two, these beings together, right? And then when you're no longer seeing eye to eye, it's like things that you never thought that you would have to question, you're now questioning. Because again, that fear, like, if I rip my son out of the backseat of the car and hand him off to the babysitter, how long will my son cry before he's able to calm himself and be okay? Meanwhile, I've got to reverse out of this driveway, drive back home, and I'm no longer a part of like my son's day. That stuff is what made me insane. And guys, if you're listening to this episode and you have even more contention than what Erica has, because honestly, Erica's divorce process, the actual process in itself, is not what we would call like a high conflict situation, right? This was very, very low. But for a lot of people who have infidelity and other things that Erica went through, their actual process gets really icky and really messy. And you need guardrails in place to protect your children and to protect your sanity when you're communicating with your ex about co-parenting, which is why, cue trumpet sound, we are massive proponents of Our Family Wizard.
That's right.
Our Family Wizard will protect you, protect your kids, manage all forms of communication. If you even need video calls with your child that can be recorded and used in front of the court, if that, God forbid, that ever happens, Our Family Wizard can do that. It is the safest way to have like managed communication in all forms. But also for people who don't need things at that like highest level of security, it'll help you organize your expenses. It helps you with your calendars. It helps you even share the good stuff like, oh, look what Trevor made in art class today. Anything and everything. And guys, you should use this app proactively because you never know. It could start off easy and then you could get to the point where things get really dark and really heavy and really scary in an instant. So Our Family Wizard, we cannot say enough about it. We love it on this podcast. And they do an exclusive deal with us where our listeners can save 20% off of using it, which they do not give discounts. So if you go to ourfamilywizard.com/notsuck20, you can take advantage of that. And there is a direct link in our show notes. I'm off my soapbox.
You did it.
I'll hop on your soapbox. We did have to use that for a year. So the reason our marriage was not contentious is because he checks out and he shuts down. And so I'm the fighter. There was nothing to fight because he just would leave. And so we had to go back to mediation because he was not showing up. And then we used Our Family Wizard for a year because he wasn't communicating his days off. He wasn't communicating what needed to happen. There was like zero going on. And literally the mediator's like, do you think you could actually step up and like respond to what she's asking for? And so we also had to use that for a year. And I love that tool. So I also highly recommend it for people. It just gets all your stuff in one spot. So you don't have to look at it all the time. Because the thing I want to add to the co-parenting piece, especially when it's contentious and especially when there's infidelity, is so often we react from our feelings instead of from the kids' feelings. And so I see a lot where people are like, well, he hurt me. And so I don't know that he's a good parent. And I don't know that I can trust all this stuff. And we have to be able to unwind that so that you can make those good decisions, right? The business decisions of, is my child safe? Is my child cared for? Yeah, he's not going to parent the same way that I do. We had lots of arguments over how to parent, how to put together bed schedules, blah, blah, blah. But things that I knew, like I knew he, my child was safe. I knew my child was cared for. Then I had to call myself out on, again, the fear that was going on about what was happening to my child at his house. Because we do have to be the responsible parents, but like sometimes it gets a little mushed together of like what's our own feelings versus what's really happening for the kids.
You know, Erica, I'm really happy that you brought that up because as a divorce lawyer, it's my job, unfortunately, a lot of times to do these kind of reality checking with clients to say, okay, what you're telling me about your relationship, all the things that happened is awful, horrendous. I hate to hear these fights. I hate to hear who's saying what, who's doing what the repercussions are. But what I'm not hearing is what's happening between your ex and the child or the children. And that's important. And so I ask, honestly, like, yes, you're having problems with him or with her, but are those problems translating to your children? And so if you're out there listening, that's what a divorce lawyer is going to be asking. Because if you're asking for, you know, some kind of ramification on the parenting agreement or maybe less time, you have to really build a case around why that is necessary. And if it's really just your feelings with your ex and your child is safe and your child is cared for, it's probably not enough to make that argument. But that's for another show, another day. And if you want more information on that, go back in our shows because we've done a million shows on the parenting agreement. Okay, back to fear. So Erica, if people listening to this could take one big takeaway out of this show related to fear, what would it be?
Yeah, it's that fear feels very real when you're in it. It is all consuming. It changes your ability to come to a rational solution. Everything in your world lines up to tell you why that fear thing is valid. So I think about fear as this little like gremlin on your shoulder. And he's kind of whispering in your ear and it starts real quiet. Ooh, something might not be okay, right? Or like, ooh, he's not picking you. Whatever those first little inklings. And fear doesn't look like, I'm scared to leave my house. Fear looks like, who am I to have that? I can't wear that. I'm self-critical, self-judgment. When you start to think about things of me versus you, that's fear. It's not all those little things on your shoulder. And the more you believe it, yeah, you're right. Who am I to wear that outfit? Yeah, you're right. He probably is still lying to me. Yeah, you're right. I'm a terrible parent. Okay. It gets louder and louder and louder until you can't find your own truth anymore. And that's when we lean on snake oil. And that's when we lean on tarot cards because we can't hear our own inner knowing. So when you're in it, it feels horrendous and all consuming. You cannot see the light at the end of the tunnel. And so the first thing that you need to do is just become aware and say, oh, wait, these are fear-based thoughts. You don't need to challenge them. You don't need to change them. You just need to say, I'm worried about stuff. I don't even know if it's true. Is this true? And if you can't answer yes, know that that's fear and it's coming to mess with you. And once you start to notice that it's fear, now you can do the work to retrace your way back out of it.
And I would add one more thing that I talk to my clients about because I agree with you. Fear is so disarming. It's awful. I always ask them to ask themselves when they're kind of going down that bad path, is this something you can control? Because the reality of a divorce and a breakup is the only person you can control is yourself. And that's it. So a lot of fear comes in about things you can't control. And so when you're having those voices in your head, ask yourself if this is something I can control. And if the answer is no, then I want you to, I always say this to people, change the channel. Change the channel, put it in the back of your brain. And you don't even have to tell your body that you're never going to talk about it again or think about it because it's going to come back. But just change the channel and try to move on.
Yeah. You know, the hardest part too in that is when it is all consuming, like my fear, my anxiety had gotten so bad, I couldn't make the right decisions. And as you stated before, we make terrible decisions when we make decisions from fear. So calming that system, you know, you have to make a decision. You know, fear is in control right now. Okay. I love the karate chop. I talk about it all the time. One palm is open, one palm, you're tapping like the fleshy part of your pinky side of your palm. Just start tapping it. Yeah. So tap away, you guys. Tap, tap, tap. What you're doing is there's a pressure point between your pinky and your ring finger knuckles. Okay. It is something this simple. You can sit at work and put your hands in your lap, and nobody knows I'm tapping right now, but I'm tapping and I'm breathing. And all it is doing is bringing you back to the present moment so that you can breathe. Breathe activates your parasympathetic nervous system, right? Rest and digest. And now I can start to be like, oh, okay, let me regain control over my thoughts.
Yeah.
What choice do I want to make? Because fear gets so big and so intense that it is like in the corner screaming at you that you have to take action right now. You need to do anything to relieve the pressure and the ickiness of how terrible it feels. And then we make crappy choices. And so little tiny tools, just tap in your lap. You got to make a decision. You're sitting in your lawyer's office and you got to make a decision and you can't breathe and you're feeling it. I want you to start tapping and breathing, take a few breaths, and then ask yourself the question again.
I'm going to one up that. Guys, if you listen to our show, you have heard us say time and time again that it takes 20 minutes for your nervous system to reset. Morgan is famous for taking breaks in mediations and telling her client, time out, we're done, we're getting up, we're going for a walk. We've got to regroup here, you need a break. So if you are taking that break, or I shouldn't say if, when you take that break, do some tapping. Take action beyond just walking to help yourself reset. And the fact you are sending a signal to your brain that you care enough about yourself, that you love yourself, and that you're honoring the fact that you are scared, and that will help you overcome the fear. And it helps you become an observer. It helps you recognize, okay, all these negative thoughts that I am thinking, those are not me. I'm hearing it and I am feeling it right now, but I'm going to take a step back so that I don't let that shit that I'm feeling dictate me into buying the snake oil and remaining. Even let's talk about people who haven't even left the marriage yet, remaining in a marriage that is never going to get better because they believe all these things about themselves. I believed for years that I was a person whom the other sex would just not be attracted to because I was not an attractive person, which I mean, what? But like that's literally what because I had so much fear in me. I bought that lie and all the snake oils for years trying to fix something that could never be fixed. So really quickly, I want you to tell everybody about your show, Crazy Ex-Wives Club. But before you do that, we teased before that something not only happened in your marriage, but in your career. Mm-hmm. So talk us through what happened in your career with Aveda that led you to Crazy Ex-Wives Club.
Yeah. So I worked for Aveda for 19 years. I grew up in the company, like 19 years corporate. You guys, I started at my first hair salon, small town Wisconsin at 16. I had to drive myself to work. So I was at the front desk. I was the girl calling to confirm your appointments, right? I loved it. It was the coolest job ever, like the coolest salon in town.
I had the same job, BTW, at Nevada Salon. So living it, yes.
Right? This is where we all started in the Midwest because it's born in the Midwest here.
How I can serve, baby.
Right? So I started there, you know, moved away to college, got in another salon, eventually corporate employee, worked my way up from the malls to regional sales, to global education, all the things. In 2021, there were just some corporate shifts and my team was outsourced. And so I was now facing what I call my second divorce. You know, who I was, what my title was, the respect I had all come from being in the same quote unquote family for 19 years. I had to figure out who I was and what did I want. Now, like any marriage, it was falling apart long before the actual signing of the contract to part ways. And so I knew that my desire on what I wanted to train on and to help people through is shifting. I had many years. I can find the behavior we need to success. I can write you a class on how we need to do things different. But if we don't change the mindset, if we don't change how we choose to see things, we stop doing the behavior, largely in part because of fear, because we doubt ourselves or we just don't think that there's value in it. And so I knew that this other desire was growing. So when my second divorce happened and I left my career, I was able to start my own business. And I knew that I wanted to, I call it the blend of the woo and the do. Because you have
a lot, right?
Because
Morgan,
you have
don't tap out.
Don't tap out, Morgan. I was already warned, but here's the deal. You either have people that are way in the woo, okay? And they're like, sit in a corner and kumbaya and like life just happens to you. That's not really true. And then you have people on the do side that are like, take action. And even if you don't know what you're doing, keep do something. Okay, well, that makes it worse. So you need to have a little bit of both, right? We need to line up to our inner knowing. You need to know, what do I really want? What feels good? What do I desire? And then you take action. And so I launched the Crazy Ex-Wives Club to help women navigate these emotions of divorce that make us feel crazy. Because if we don't do the work to care for and heal our own emotions, we do act crazy. I was yelling and screaming. I chucked a water bottle at the wall. Like, I did things that I would not have normally done if my emotions weren't in control. So the podcast tries to blend a little of both, right? We need to have a little bit of mindset and emotional healing and getting through the stuff that feels so heavy and gross. And then you need to go take some action. You cannot just sit here and wait for one day for it all to be better. You have to do the work to be able to truly move into a life that you love. Like, I love my life. I love the things that I'm building. And there are days that still I'm bummed out. Then I go back and I do the work. I look at the emotions. I look at what I'm trying to soothe or need. And then I take action to go fix that need for myself.
Hey, I think that that's great. And guys, not only does Erica have the podcast that you should all go and check out, but there's also a private community. So if you want some more hands-on help with conquering fear and having a safe place where you can chat about all these things beyond what we do in our private community, this would be more of a place where they're learning about more like healing steps, not so much things regarding actual divorce. Go check out that private community. We're going to have links to all of that in our show notes. And Erica, this was such a cool conversation. And you have conquered so many things. And I love like the Aveda connection that the three of us share. And I applaud you for taking something like knowing that somebody doesn't love you the way that you deserve to be loved, and recognizing it and then moving through that to get to the other side. And I have to ask you really quickly before we bid you adieu, do you feel loved now?
I do. And it's because the biggest person that loves me is me. And there is such a huge freedom in finding yourself. Like, that is the biggest journey of divorce, is you have to learn how you hold yourself up and how you love your own choices and how you get to choose exactly what you want. And so I love that, you know, when I tap into more knowing of like, I'm worthy and I love myself and I love who I am, and am I perfect? No, nobody is. Then I also have more of that mindset for other people. I can accept people the way that they are because I want to be accepted the way I am. And we try and change less. And we just build a whole network of people that are willing to see you for who you really are and allow you to be who you really need to be.
I love it. This was great. Thank you so much, Erica.
What an impressive story. Okay, let's recap really quickly. What Erica said is completely on point. Fear will paralyze you. When you're in fear, you cannot make good decisions. And what she was talking about is, one, identifying your fear and knowing kind of what happens with that fear. And then identifying it in relation to a divorce or decisions. We don't want to make those big decisions when you are fearful. It should never be a knee-jerk reaction, anything related to a breakup, a divorce, any decisions in a divorce, no knee-jerk reactions. So you have to identify if you're in that fear.
And identifying that you're feeling scared is, I mean, they say like acknowledging the problem is the first step of the problem, but it is. I just recognizing I'm feeling scared right now will help stop that domino effect of all of those negative thoughts that it's those thoughts that push you into making a decision. So just saying, okay, stop. I am feeling really scared that my life is going to always look like this. So what am I going to do now to pull myself back and regroup so I don't make a decision, a knee-jerk reaction decision? Take that walk. Do that tapping on your hand. There are tapping videos galore on YouTube. There are so many different tools that you can do that'll help you regroup. Find one that works for you. The whole point is reset your nervous system so that you're not running on those fumes of, oh my God, 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 fine, I'll agree to this. Okay, fine, make this go away. Or you know what? I'm not going to pull the trigger and tell her or tell him that I want out of this marriage because they're right. I will be alone for the rest of my life and I can't do that. You got to stop.
And you have to ask yourself again, is this something I can control? If it isn't, you've got to change the channel. If it is, it's worthy of thinking about more, figuring out how to make the best decision. So listen, if you're in the fear-based, you know, thought process, we understand. We're here for you. That's why we did this episode. What we ask of you is a simple rate and review. That's how we bring on these fabulous guests. And that's why we do this podcast, so that you don't make big mistakes in any breakup or divorce process.
We've all made those mistakes. Every single person you run into is going to have a story about something that they could have done better. And there's no shame in that. We want you to realize that there's more than one way to do this. Getting divorced is not going to ruin your life if you don't let it. It can be the absolute best thing that ever happened to you. You have the ability to let this completely evolve and you will turn into a beautiful butterfly, my friend. Or you could not listen to us and you can fuck everything up. So the choice is yours. We want you to listen, follow our guidance, and evolve and protect yourself and your sanity and your children. Remember, this process is not a sprint. This is a marathon. Take your time. Take a breath. Listen to our show, join our private community, follow us on social media, and my God, utilize the Divorce Crash Course. It is there for a reason.
That is right. And on your worst days, remember this, you have got this.
And we have got you.